This podcast is an affiliate of BCW Supplies. The next time you need to restock on comic book bags, boards, boxes, and more, be sure to use promo code FSP to save 10% on your order. That's FSP for Flat Squirrel Productions. It helps support the show, too. Many of you have already used this code, and I greatly appreciate it. Thank you. This podcast is made possible by the support of our Patreon community. Sign up for a monthly or annual membership at patreon.com/AnthonyDesiato and choose from a range of rewards. This week, I want to spotlight our Daily Planet bullpen tier, available for $1 a month or $10 for the year. Members at this level are the first to know about upcoming coverage and get to submit a comment or question to be read during the episode. Sign up today, and thank you to all patrons. In the 1950s, George Reeves embodied the Man of Steel in Superman's first television adaptation. From its gritty black and white beginnings to the kid-friendly color years, to this day, an entire generation reveres George as their Superman, while for others, the show remains an overlooked chapter in the character's mythology. On this podcast, we bring everyone together as we break down each episode of Adventures of Superman. Welcome to another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman. I'm your host, Anthony Desiato. Joining me to discuss Season 2, Episode 2, The Big Squeeze, is Voices from Krypton author and returning guest, Ed Gross. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. An incredible feeling of deja vu. Happy to be here.
Feels like you never left. You were just here, and we talked about the Season 2 premiere, 5 Minutes to Doom, and now we're back to talk about The Big Squeeze, which aired on September 25th, 1953, written by David Chandler, directed once again by Tommy Carr. Let me give my synopsis and then we'll break it down as we always do. The Daily Planet's intended recipient of its Citizen of the Year award, Dan Grayson, is a devoted family man, trusted employee of the Metropolis Fur Company, and secretly an ex-convict. When Luke Maynard, a criminal from Grayson's past, threatens to expose him unless he aids in a robbery of the fur company, Grayson turns to Clark for help, but their plan fails. After Maynard makes off with the furs, a disgraced Grayson tries taking matters into his own hands, ultimately requiring a rescue from Superman. Ultimately, on television, Clark bestows Grayson with the award and speaks to Grayson's son and the people of Metropolis about the importance of second chances. So, I toss it to you. What were your overall impressions of this episode?
I like the episode, not quite as much as I did Five Minutes to Doom. It was effective, and I think part of the reason I liked the episode as much as I did was Hugh Beaumont as the guest star. He, you know, he's Ward Cleaver on Leave It to Beaver, but he brings sort of a rootedness, I think, to, you know, he really roots this character. You believe this man and his, you know, very understated means of wanting to keep his secret a secret, the fact that, you know, he's an ex-con and all. And yet there's moments when he's holding a gun where, you know, that was part of his early career, was playing gangsters and things in you know, gangster films. And it was interesting watching him sort of flip from sort of the understated good man to the guy who's pretty comfortable holding that gun, at least for a while. So I liked it. And I think I liked it mostly because of him.
That's fair. I think for me, overall, I found this to be a compelling episode. I agree, not to the level of the episode we talked about last week, which I thought was particularly strong, but there's a lot to like about this. I very much enjoyed Beaumont's performance. Now, I will confess, I don't think I've ever seen Leave It to Beaver.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's classic TV, man.
I know. Well, here's the thing. So look, I'm born in 87, so obviously that's well before my time, but I'm no stranger to classic television, even aside from the show that we're here talking about. But as I've mentioned many times before, a huge Honeymooners fan, a huge Happy Days fan, and through TV Land and Nick at Night and whatnot as a kid, I saw my fair share of Bewitched and Gilligan's Island and kind of other shows like that. But Leave It to Beaver, for whatever reason, just kind of never really came my way. So in a sense, though, I think maybe that even helps me with this episode because I have, you know, I have no other preconceived notions of this actor or any other characters that he's played. I really could just buy into him in this. And I thought he was great.
Absolutely. And like having not seen Leave It to Beaver, and I promise not to turn this into a Leave It to Beaver episode. What's interesting is, you know, Hugh was the patriarch of the Cleaver family, right? And whenever the kids would get in trouble, it was never serious trouble. It was a very gentle comedy. But he was always the voice of reason. And again, he rooted it. His approach to his sitting down and talking to his sons rooted it. And I think that's sort of the thing I was getting at before. He brings it here. Absolutely.
That's the thing. And especially as a dad, I think what resonated most with me about this episode, we have a number of scenes where Dan's young son learns of Dan's criminal past, and it really changes his view of his father, and he really gives his dad the cold shoulder in numerous instances. And like I said, as a father myself, like that's something that it really hit home. And, you know, you think about what that would feel like to have the person you care about the most and who, you know, looks up to you in that way, to have their image of you shattered like that. It's heartbreaking. And yeah, I think he brought so much to those scenes, and I found those particularly interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to question the casting of kids on this show at that stage, because this kid is another one who, you know, like last week's episode, the kid didn't bring a lot of emotion to what was going on. In fact, he looked almost homicidal in certain things, the way he would just glare at his father, like, I'm going to kill you in your sleep, man. I don't know. It's just something about this kid casting to me seems to be a little bit off on both these episodes. What can I tell you?
Fair enough. Well, so speaking of guest stars, so you mentioned, of course, Hugh Beaumont. We also have John Kellogg as Luke Maynard. He has been on Adventures of Superman before. He was Mitch in Night of Terror, the classic season one episode. And we just saw him last week in 5 Minutes to Doom. He was Turk, the hitchhiker who plants the bomb in the car. Right. So a familiar face. And speaking of the child actor, we have Brad Morrow as Tim Grayson and Aline Town as Peg Grayson, the wife who played Lara in Superman on Earth.
That's right. I forgot about that. See, I'm learning things.
Yeah. So, a bunch of familiar faces here in this episode. Like I said, I enjoy this episode a lot overall. Building off of our conversation last week, I think this continues this theme of these human interest stories, and where season one episodes, for example, might have spent more time with the heavy of the episode, with the criminal masterminds. Here, it's really the innocent, right, at the heart of all of this, who our characters are trying to help and trying to save. So again, just in terms of what the show has become, I think this is another solid example of that. And the other thing too, I mean, we could save this for when we get to the scene, but let me ask you now, because I think this is kind of a good big picture question. Clark very specifically and explicitly helps Grayson avoid going to the police with his dilemma. And I was just kind of curious what your take was on that, if that felt totally in keeping, if you were surprised by that in any respect, or just what opinion you might have had on that.
Well, I think at this time with the character, especially in the show, I think the idea of putting the interests or the justice for the individual is probably more prevalent in his mind than worrying about the police or bringing him to the police or doing the right thing that way by going the justice route. He right now is still the crusader, right? When Superman started, he didn't care about authority figures. He cared about helping the people who were in trouble. And I think at this point in the show, he's still in that mode where it's more important to help this guy through his plight than worry about, well, we should go to the police and do it this way or do it the official way or see if justice carries out. And if it doesn't, then I'll help you out. He's sort of nudging the guy nudging the situation so that he can help the guy himself and leave the police out of it. And I don't really have a problem with it, given the time and given that early version of Superman. I'm not sure he wouldn't do the same thing today, frankly. To be honest with you, he's going to put that guy, if somebody's been, you know, unjustly accused of something or is being manipulated, he's going to help that person out rather than worry about what the police are going to say, I think.
Right. No, I agree. Or you can just argue it's all self-interest on Clark's part because he's the one who selects this guy to be Citizen of the Year, and he doesn't want to have all that blow up in his face. No.
I don't think he's not that selfish, though, that he's worried about his own thing. But yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I agree with what you said. It was just kind of interesting. And then I suppose my last big picture question, this episode has a particularly strong moral message, feel more so than what we've seen before. I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's like tonight on a very special Adventures of Superman, right? It's not quite in that vein, but at the same time, this whole idea of, hey, this guy committed a crime. He went to prison. He paid his debt to society. He has started a family. He's involved in the community. He has a stable job. He's revered by his coworkers and his employer. He's paid his debt to society. We shouldn't continue to penalize him for the mistake that he made in his past. I feel like in a lot of ways, it's a kind of a forward-thinking message for the show to be espousing in the 50s. And I was you know, kind of pleasantly surprised and impressed by that. I don't know if that felt in keeping to you or if that kind of, you know, felt forward thinking. So I guess I would kind of pose that to you. And then not to, you know, take the show down, but does it get too preachy, especially when Clark goes on TV and has this whole message? Do you think that they struck a fair balance or that they went a little bit overboard with it?
I think we're having an issue with that. I like the idea of Superman representing a PSA, right? Give people a second chance. They paid for their crime. They deserve to have a second chance. My issue with it is it shouldn't be Clark at the end on television. It should be Superman. If you want that message to resonate with the television audience, have Superman deliver the message how it's important that people be given a second chance, because people are going to stand up and take notice of Superman saying it a lot more than Clark Kent. Clark Kent delivering the message to me doesn't have the weight that Superman would have, you know? Which also raises the question of who's broadcasting this thing. But anyway, that's my big takeaway from that, is I really felt it should have been Superman delivering the message.
You're totally right. Why? That's actually a very curious choice.
Yeah. I thought so. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess I was really fixated more on is this too preachy? Is, like, if Clark had said what he said to little Timmy in the Graysons' living room, I would have said, "Oh yeah, that totally tracks." It was that televised message where it felt like a PSA. But I think maybe what did make it kind of feel more off was that it was coming from Clark. No, I agree. Oh. I feel like the Superman of it all would have made a lot more sense.
It so would have carried weight. It's the difference between go jump to Superman 4. I'm going to rid this world of all nuclear weapons. Well, some politician says it. Nobody cares. Superman says it. You sit up and you take notice.
I'm a proud backer of the Paragons of Earth comic book project, now available to support on Kickstarter. The creative team of Percival Constantine, Thomas DJ, and Eric Johns have plucked forgotten Golden Age superheroes from the public domain, reinvented them as their own sort of Justice League, and put them up against a Lovecraftian apocalypse. Back this project and learn more by going to percivalconstantine.com/paragons. Also, Perry, a multiple-time guest on Digging for Kryptonite, hosts the Superhero Cinephiles podcast about comic book-inspired films. Be sure to listen wherever you get podcasts. We reference the television series Smallville a lot around here, and there's one Smallville rewatch podcast that's always at the top of my queue. Always Hold On to Smallville, hosted by our pal, Zach Moore. Zach and his guests bring tremendous insight, passion, and humor as they discuss each and every episode of the series that ushered in the renaissance of superhero TV. Listen to Always Hold On to Smallville wherever you get podcasts, and keep an eye out for the other shows under the Always Hold On to banner, including Arrow, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Superman and Lois, and Star Wars. This episode made possible in part by educator, hobby comic book collector, and pop culture enthusiast Sam Lim. Sam is based in the South Jersey area and is looking to connect with other comics fans as well as retailers. They're also looking for comic shops to explore, so recommendations are welcome. Be sure to follow Sam on Instagram at SZLComics to see their latest comic pickups and shop adventures. All right, let's go scene by scene through the big squeeze. So we open at the Metropolis Fur Company with Clark and the owner of the company, and they're looking at this award, the Citizen of the Year award. Clark has Dan Grayson in mind, and he's speaking with the owner about this employee. And of course, the owner gives his highest recommendation. He's been this loyal worker here. And then we see Dan in his area there. And he gets kind of an ominous phone call by the character we'll come to learn is Luke Maynard, this figure from his criminal past, who's just checking to make sure that is Dan Grayson, and he'll be hearing from him. So very ominous, kind of setting the stage for what's to come. And then Dan accidentally locks himself in the vault.
Yeah, he locks himself in the vault, and they can't open the vault because there's a timer on it. And basically, it's going to fill with gas that's for mothballing purposes. That's going to, he can only handle an hour's worth of time in there.
Yeah, so that raises the stakes here. It's not just that he's locked in there, he's going to run out of air, it's that he's in there with these chemicals. So they have to get him out. And like you said, there were all these restrictions. But thankfully, Clark is there and he's able to rush off. And we get a very early in the episode Superman appearance, unlike the episode we talked about last time, where we only have Superman at the very end when all else fails. But here we get an early appearance by Superman, and he rips off the vault door, saving Dan. And again, he leans the door up against the wall, and there is the shot where you clearly see it starting to fall over. But of course, by the time we cut back, it's fine. But you know, a funny little bit of business. I always, they're always fun to see little goofs here and there like that. And I think can be a little charming.
What I found interesting is by this point in these first two episodes of the season, if I'm not mistaken, we've seen Superman smash through a wall. We've seen Superman smash through windows, a double window that you hear the glass break as he flies in. He rips a vault door off and puts it on the side. He doesn't offer to fix anything. He just causes this destruction. You don't think he'd take the vault and put it back? He'd vision it up and there you go. Or he didn't have to vision, I guess, but... that just cracked me up. I'm watching all the destruction that's in this episode. Later, he crashes through a cave wall. Do we know that the mountain's not going to fall down on top of them? this is sort of my observation, is that Superman's just causing chaos without realizing it and not fixing any of it. There you go.
He is on the destructive side. That's probably fair. you know what? Actually, I wasn't thinking about this too much, but you're right, especially with the vault door. I mean, in theory, could he not have just like pulled it open? Like he like rips the whole thing out of the wall. No, I know.
And they say it's going to be 3 days before we can have it put back on. It's like the dude could have just done it.
Right. I mean, certainly plot wise that feeds into the rest of the episode, but yeah, it's like, it'll take days to repair it. And the owner's like, oh, I'll bring in a night watchman to guard the furs until it's fixed. Maybe, look, in season two, as we've talked about, Superman's not throwing punches anymore. So we had to make up for it somehow. So just make him smashing everything. So Superman makes his rescue. And then, of course, Clark comes back and he talks to Dan. He's really, it's interesting with this, because they're really, the knowledge that he's been selected as a citizen of the year, that doesn't come until later, right? Like Clark is still now just, he has this guy in mind. He's, you know, he's talking to his boss. Now he's talking to Dan himself. He's really just making sure like this is the guy. But he has this boat model that he shows to Dan, and Dan's like, oh, I'm making that for my son. And then they're going to go out for coffee. And we then go to the Grayson home where, you know, Dan's coming home after all of this. And he's excited to recount to his wife and son about what happened as Superman saved him. But before they can get to that, there's, you know, a knock at the door, and it's this person who had called him earlier, Luke Maynard, and they go outside to talk. And that's where we get this information that they had this criminal past together, and Maynard is here essentially to extort him, right? That other people that they've committed crimes with in the past, they pay Maynard a fee, right? They kick something back to him.
Protection.
Yeah, exactly. And if Grayson doesn't go along with this, then, you know, Maynard will spill the beans about the fact that Grayson is an ex-convict. And of course, the son is hearing all of this. And then there's a scene at the Daily Planet where we have our team talking for a little bit. But then back at the Grayson house, that's where we have, you know, that instance we were talking about before of the little boy, you know, just giving his father the death stare. Yeah. Hey, look, acting aside, again, I think just that father-son dynamic, you feel it, right? And so you get, you definitely get it from Dan's perspective about why the stakes are so high in all of this. That scene that I mentioned at the Daily Planet, where they're talking about kind of who's going to handle which part of the story about Dan, just the thing that made me laugh was Perry assigning Jimmy the et cetera of the proceedings.
That was kind of funny, actually. And then Jimmy's reaction when he gets out in the hall, wait a minute. Pretty good.
Exactly. So we have a bunch of quick scenes here. I'll kind of run through them. Anything that you want to circle back to and talk about more, I'm totally game. So at the fur company, we have another meeting between Luke and Dan, and Luke gets the idea of, hey, you don't have to pay me, but you're going to help me steal these furs, right? So he eyes a bigger payday at that point. And we're then back at the Grayson house once again, little Timmy giving his dad the cold shoulder, this time over playing a game of checkers. That's when Lois and Clark show up, tell him, hey, you've been selected. You're the guy, citizen of the year. It's already in the edition that's on the streets right now.
And he's what like, is that?
Yeah, they really jumped the gun on that one, I guess.
Don't even tell the guy. Yeah, I mean, his bewilderment is pretty funny. You can't do that without asking me.
So, yeah.
He's right. But yeah, it was a little weird.
Yeah, but he doesn't want any part of this, especially when Lois is like, you know, we'll tell your whole life story, right? Of course, he wants no part of that. So he refuses the award. And then at the Daily Planet, of course, Perry is fuming over all of this. He says something to Clark about how, like, you know, problem with this is you pick people who want to play hard to get with these gimmicks. But then Clark is told that there's a Mr. Grayson in his office, and he goes in and it's the little boy. And right. I like this scene a lot. When, you know, Clark's initial reaction, he's like, oh, well, you know, you are Mr. Grayson. And Tim, even though he's had his vision of his father shatter here with this revelation about his criminal past, he still wants to protect his father, and he doesn't want Clark to print anything about his dad and the fact that he's been to prison. And I like this scene. Anytime you have George in a scene with a kid, yeah, I feel like it's just magical, and you see a different side of the character, right?
It's a softer side, and he's just got, you can trust him, even though one of the notes I made today, so I was making fun of this actually, was when he says to Tim, he goes, you know, I wouldn't do anything to hurt your daddy, don't you? And Tim goes, yes, I do. And I'm thinking to myself, the real reaction would be, who are you? I mean, why would I even know to think to trust you? That being said, that's just my more snarky side coming out, I guess, because the truth is there is something about George, and supposedly he loved kids anyway, and that's why kids were so delighted to meet him, is he just projects this warmth and protectiveness. Forget Superman, as Clark Kent. He just lightens up, and he has a real genuine smile with them and stuff. And it's just, it plays really beautifully, that scene, I think. Like it does most of the scenes with him and kids.
So. Absolutely. That one was definitely a standout. And then Clark goes to the fur company to talk to Dan. And Dan gives his whole story about how he got mixed up in all of this and fills Clark in on what's been going on. And Dan really at this point, he's resigned to go to the police. And this is where, as we talked about before, Clark is like, well, you know, kind of pump the brakes on that. We might not need the police if we can get Superman to help. So working outside the law here to try to, you know, preserve the life that this guy has built.
Yeah. Which again, is honorable in its own right. I mean, seriously, beyond going to the law.
Yeah, exactly. So at the cafe, Luke and Dan, you know, talk about what Luke has planned for stealing these furs, this whole idea of Dan, you know, hiding in the vault, taking out the night watchman, and then Luke is going to come in. But as soon as Luke leaves, Dan calls Clark and gives him the rundown. And, you know, Clark's like, okay, you'll just go home and, you know, we'll go from there. But then later that night, when Superman shows up, the watchman has already been taken out and the furs are gone. So their plan to try to keep a lid on all of this, prevent the robbery and nab Maynard has fallen apart.
And I love the expression on George's face as Superman when he gets there and sees the vault empty. There's just this almost bewildered look like, how do they get this over on me? You know what I mean? Like a real genuine bewilderment in his eyes of what's going on here and how this happened. So, I mean, nothing much more than that, but that to me, just something that stuck out about the scene is just something in George's eyes played that I thought very well in that moment.
Two questions. I mean, do you think there's any part of him that thought he was double-crossed by Dan? Or do you think he maintained his faith in Dan throughout?
No, I think he maintained his faith in Dan. I think Clark/Superman, they put their faith in somebody. And until that person really proves it wrong, I think he maintains that. So I'm sure he probably jumped, well, sure. But I think he jumped to the conclusion that Dan had been double-crossed basically, and that this guy had his own agenda, which of course alerts him to the fact that Dan's probably in trouble. So, you know, beyond this.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of points to my other question. So do you think Luke just jumped the gun? He just accelerated the time frame in terms of executing this robbery?
I know it feels like he was trying to get what he wanted, but also put Dan Under again back in prison, like basically frame him for the job. That's what it struck me of, is like, take care of it, cut all this other stuff out, and the blame is actually going to fall on Dan, especially when you use the logic of, well, he was locked in the thing and maybe he did himself to get the vault broken. I mean, not that anyone would have expected Superman to rip it off. So I do wonder if that was sort of his agenda, is like, I'm going to get what I want, and this sucker's going back to prison, basically, for the crime.
Yeah.
He got used before, so why not be used again? Seriously, like when he was younger, he got used, which sent him to jail in the first place.
Makes sense. We see Dan, a very brief scene of him getting brought in for questioning, right? The detective shows up at his house. And then back at the Daily Planet, Perry, once again, mad about all of this. But what I noted here about this scene was, this is where you have Clark, I think for the first time in this episode, really articulate the message of this episode about how, you know, Dan had already paid his debt to society. Like, we have to help him. Right. So really, really driving that home. Speaking of home, back at the Grayson house, Dan is explaining to Clark, he's been out there trying to, so clearly in short period of time, right, quickly let go from the fur company.
Right. He's looking for another job.
It looks like he's guilty. He's in the papers. Everything's come to light. He can't find a job anywhere else. And once again, the theme of this episode here, this moral message, he says to Clark, everyone knows I'm a con. And Clark, he's very particular, goes, ex-con, right? Like, right. really trying to build up this guy, right? At his kind of his lowest moment here, and really reinforcing this message of, hey, you're more than this, you're beyond this, and I'm trying to help you.
Absolutely. And there is such a thing as driving home a point too much. But again, looking at the time, you know, the early 50s, to me, that's okay. Like today, if you tried to do that, people would say, I get it, move on. But back then, maybe it was just the different timing allowed you to sort of get away with driving home a point to make sure the audience got it, basically. You know, plus it reaffirms Clark's faith in him anyway by saying ex-con, emphasizing to him, I'm seeing you in a way that you're not seeing yourself.
Right. And look, and not to get on my soapbox or anything, but I mean, like, this is a true issue, and it's a different spin on it here because a different era. The fact that he was able to even keep this a secret and get a job without anyone knowing,
it's like, know it, of course.
Now. It's like, of course. Not. So it's like here, you know, now these days, right? It's even more of an issue where just to get a job can be this insurmountable hurdle, right? Like, even as a condition of your parole, like, you have to gain employment, but you can't because no one wants to hire someone who's been to prison, and it's a real thing. So like I said, even just in this context here, the fact that the show was tackling that kind of issue, I think was really fascinating.
Absolutely.
And this is where the son doesn't want to play with the boat. And the other kids in the neighborhood, they don't want to play with him anymore. So again, another instance of this son's growing frustration and disillusionment with his father. Thankfully, we know we're circling around to a triumphant end here.
But it's showing the impact and how quickly it is that this man's life is falling apart, basically, in the sense that he loses his job, his son loses his friends, basically, and the relationship between father and son is damaged by all of this in very quick succession. So it's kind of interesting to see it happen that fast. Very powerful, I think.
Yeah, very much so. This brings us to police headquarters and an appearance by Inspector Henderson. Lois and Clark and Jimmy are there, and Maynard has been brought in for questioning, but he's walking out, purports to have, you know, cooperated with the police. What I love about this, it's such a short scene, but I love Clark starting to go after Maynard. Oh, yeah. Like, he's just like ready to get this guy. Yeah.
I thought that was great.
But of course, Henderson stops him. I feel like maybe this is a sign of season two versus season one, because Clark wants to go after Maynard and Henderson's like, no, you have to stay here for questioning. And Clark relents. I don't know. I feel like season one Clark would have been like,
started a fire or something. I don't know. Created distraction to get out. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But yeah, the fact that he went in, but you could see his frustration. But what's he going to say to Henderson? No, I'm not going to listen to you. So, I mean, you know, I get it.
But yeah, very fleeting Henderson appearance, but at least he pops up here for a moment.
And strong. That was a nice thing. I think Bob Shane did a good job in a few words of being very authoritative, basically, and played it well. I thought it played definitely well. So
yeah. And that, I mean, essentially brings us to our climax of the episode, where Dan now, and to your earlier point, decides to take matters into his own hands, where he stows away in the car with Maynard and his new accomplice. and they end up in this like mountain hideout.
And lined with lead.
Lined with lead, yeah. And Grayson has that gun, like you said, seeing him with the gun and kind of back in that mode. But he's a changed man, and they call his bluff, essentially, right? Because he won't go so far as pulling the trigger. And Maynard is able to get the drop on him and explains that this hideout is lined with lead, so they know that Superman won't see. Jimmy, of course, has followed and is able to get word to Clark. And that prompts our second Superman appearance of the episode. But what I liked about this whole climax here was that, well, it's interesting, I think, that Maynard knows about Superman's inability to
see through lead.
So there's that. But what I really liked was Grayson's savviness. So one of the ticks, right, that Maynard has throughout this episode is that he's always crushing these walnuts, right, in virtually every scene that we see him in.
Right.
And Grayson is savvy enough to know that, okay, Superman might not be able to see us through the lead that's lining this hideout, but he could hear. And I forget exactly what he says, but essentially it prompts Maynard to start crushing those nuts again.
Right. And it's very cool that the sound of the walnuts is what attracts Superman's attention. I thought that was really cool seeing him, recognizing that, hearing the sound, smashing through the cave wall as a result. But that was actually a very clever, and you don't usually see them in their storytelling, I don't think, laying down the path of something like that. It's a sort of character detail that you don't often see in these shows. And I thought that was interesting, as a way of getting Superman to find it. But it didn't feel like this arbitrary thing at the end of the episode that gave Superman the clue.
That's a great point. And tying this back with the conversation we had last episode, we were talking about 5 minutes to doom, the fact that you had that earlier scene between Mr. Wayne and the secretary, and you see the tension between them. And then at the end of that episode, when you get that line that, oh, she squealed on him and she's cooperating and revealing all this information. You appreciate the groundwork that they're laying. It'd be easy not to, and just kind of tack these things on. But the fact that they're really seeding it throughout, I know I really do enjoy that. And
that's what makes, I'm sorry.
No, please, you go.
No, I was just going to say, but that's again, what elevates it from just being a strictly a kid's show or a comic book show into something with a little more reality in it. And then a lot of the later episodes would be, because I guarantee you're not going to get that kind of thing layered in throughout in a lot of the later episodes. So I love that. That's a real different aspect of this.
Yes. And so not only do I love that Grayson was clever enough to try to prompt this, knowing that Superman would use his hearing, but then when Superman busts through, Dan gets in on the action too.
Yeah.
In terms of apprehending the bad guy. So I like that he was as active a participant as he was in the proceedings. I just thought it was a nice touch.
I also think he could have shot the guy in the leg and not killed him, and that would have been okay too, but that's besides the point before Superman got there. But it is 1951 or 53, whatever it was. But yeah.
No, I don't disagree. I mean, I feel like probably that was a product of, well, we need to get to the climax with Superman here. We can't have the episode end. We also are toning down the violence here. Even if we're not talking death, it's still a gunshot. But also, I'll give the show the benefit of the doubt, and I'll say that this guy had changed so much that even the notion of inflicting that relatively minor, compared to outright killing the guy, level of violence was something that he wasn't prepared to do, that he had really turned over this new leaf. So I'll go with that.
But what? He didn't have a new leaf to turn over. This is the thing to keep in mind. Back when he was 18 years old, he thought he was doing something else. He wasn't a gangster. He wasn't somebody trying to hurt somebody. He got manipulated into a situation. So there wasn't a new leaf in a sense for him to become. He was a good man all along who got manipulated and is now being manipulated again.
You're right. That's a fair point. Because going back to that scene where he explains what happened in his past to Clark, that is the thing. He really just kind of got roped into this situation. Do you think they should have given him that quote unquote out? Or do you think it should have been like, no, like I knew what I was doing. I made the mistake. Do you think that would have reinforced or driven home the ultimate message of the episode more? Does it undermine its own message a little bit if it's just that, like, oh, it's just, he wasn't even ultimately responsible. Like, he was manipulated in that way.
Yeah, but you know, it doesn't matter in a sense. He was found guilty and went to jail. And he spent, was it 3 years in jail or something? Yeah. I forget how many years it was in jail. But, and then he had to come out. So no matter what the circumstances were of him going in, he's an ex-con coming out. So that situation of needing a second chance applies to him just as much as it would for somebody who did a more serious crime.
Yeah. No, fair enough. And that then takes us to that television appearance that we've been talking about, where Clark gives Dan the award and then has this whole message to Tim, but to the people at large, about the importance of second chances. And well, I agree with you. I think that having Superman deliver the message in the context of this episode and just the series as a whole, I don't know. Like, I do feel like that would have made more sense. I also think like, why would Clark, but you know, not that this Clark is, you know, really just seems all that concerned about keeping a low profile.
Yeah. But why would you want to go on TV and everyone looking at you? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, that to me was like a sort of a weakness of the episode, because it didn't feel real to me. It felt like a missed opportunity. And again, like I said earlier, if you're going to pay attention to somebody giving that message, you're going to pay a lot more attention to Superman than Clark Kent.
Aw Yeah Comics celebrates and promotes everything that is wonderful about comics, toys, artwork, and the joy they bring to people. Visit them in person at one of their three locations: Harrison, New York, aka my local comic shop, Skokie, Illinois, or Muncie, Indiana. If you have kids and have been looking for a family-friendly store, look no further. Join Aw Yeah for exciting events, including creator signings, how-tos, and more. Visit awyeahcomics.com and follow Aw Yeah on social media for more. Their name says exactly how they feel about it. Say it with me now. Aw Yeah. Fat Moose Comics is New Jersey's best and oldest comic book store. Established in 1982 and under new ownership since 2020, Moose sells a wide selection of comics from every publisher and time period, along with action figures, graphic novels, posters, statues, and more. If you're looking for something and they don't have it, they can probably get it for you. They know a guy. Visit Fat Moose in Whippany the next time you're in the Garden State, and be sure to reach out via the Fat Moose Comics Facebook page. Filmmakers and movie fans alike should be sure to attend these film festivals: Brightside Tavern in Jersey City, Hang On to Your Shorts in Asbury Park, Point Lookout on Long Island, and Round Reel in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Take it from an alum of two of them. Submission information for filmmakers, as well as details about the festivals, can be found at filmfreeway.com. Follow the festivals on social media for news about events, discounts, tickets, and more. Also, listen to the Hang On to Your Shorts and Cullen on Film podcasts, available via a shared universe network. So, as you know, we rate the episodes on a scale of 1 to 5 fedoras. So how many would you give The Big Squeeze?
You know, here's my problem. My problem is I would like to give it the same as I did 5 Seconds to Doom, but that was a really strong one, and I gave that a 4. So I almost feel like I have to give this one a 3 or 3.5, because what are we measuring these things against? You know, you get to A Panic in the Sky, that's a 5 for me. 5 Seconds of Doom is a 4. So I guess I have to do a 3, 3.5, somewhere in there of this one.
That's fair. I feel like last season I might've been a little too stringent in my awarding of fedoras, because yeah, if we're holding up something like Panic in the Sky as a 5, then almost there are very few other ones that I could give a 5 to. So I don't want to be so ardent in that. I did give last week's episode a 5. Similarly, using the same logic as you, I enjoyed this episode, definitely not as much as I did the first episode. It was compelling, but not compelling. I think too, looking at last week's episode, which you and I talked about, like, the stakes were so high and the clock was ticking. Really had that running clock that gave it such a sense of urgency.
And so soft in a lot of ways, you know, it was. Yeah, compelling, interesting, but softer. It just in what it was trying, what it was doing, and how it was telling the story. Right. Not as urgent,
right? But now, in fairness, the potential loss of this boy's faith in his father, right? Those are compelling stakes, no doubt. But yeah, I'll go with a 4 for The Big Squeeze. And you know, maybe that's a bit generous, but 3.5 is probably more accurate. But I'll go 4. I'm still riding the high of being back doing this podcast and being in season 2. So I'm going to go with a 4 for that. This is one of the shortest podcast episodes I think I've ever recorded, but I feel like we said what we needed to say. I think we covered it. I think we did it.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Voices from Krypton. Where can people get it? And is there anything else that you want to direct people to?
That's the main thing. I want people to know this book exists. It's an oral history of Superman, all 85 years. And you can find it on Amazon or basically anywhere books are sold. And all I can say is if anyone was going to write a love letter to Superman, that's what this is. It truly is.
Excellent. Well, I encourage everyone to check it out. Ed, thank you for joining me once again. It was a pleasure having you to kick off season two and have you do these two episodes. Audience, thank you for tuning in. Make sure you come back next week as we get into episode 3 of season 2. And until then, remember, only Superman can do super things. Be sure to check out our sister podcast series, Digging for Kryptonite, a Superman fan journey, a weekly exploration of Superman's vast 85-year mythology, available wherever you get podcasts. Please join us on social media, become a patron, and subscribe, rate, and review today. Links are in the show notes. Thank you all.